Welcome to Coinology, the podcast.
You ain't getting no money if you constantly worried about what everybody else got to say. If you constantly got your eyes on what everybody else doing, you ain't getting no money. When it comes down to closing a deal, I get you done. Every single one.
Welcome to Coinology, the podcast.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of Coinology. Third season Trey. It keeps getting hotter. And this time, this season, this episode, we have none other than celebrity publicist, producer, Freshy.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I know we've been talking about trying to get you in here for a couple of seasons. We finally got a few moments of your time. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, because I know you're busy. I saw you coming in on the phone, still closing those deals out, right?
Yeah, you got to do. I feel like when I took on this job, I didn't realize just how intense it was. Mm-hmm. But I'm a man of do whatever I say I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Just get it done. And so...
Gotta do it, right?
Gotta do it.
So, Freshy, everybody knows you as the publicist for Offset. Mm-hmm. Name off some of your other clients.
I have Offset. I have Saucy Santana. I have Kay Michelle. I know I'm forgetting people. I do a lot of stuff with Dirk. There's a lot of my lifestyle clients from Ebony, Austin. I have Chad Dillon, who owns The Boiler. You name it, I probably work with them. And then even if they're not like signed to my roster specific, I get a lot of talent that calls me to help them do a lot of things.
Do a lot of execute events and so forth.
So on and so forth.
You know, one of my favorite, and you just mentioned Saucy. I love Saucy. Mm-hmm. I love Saucy, okay?
I love everything about him. I love everything that we've been able to accomplish. Mm-hmm. I know we're in a transition right now where he just left the label. Mm-hmm. And so we're going back, and I feel like we did more without the label anyways. Mm-hmm. And so one of the coolest things is about what I do is I haven't worked for an institution, and people don't realize that about me. I literally built this brand from the ground up, brick by brick. Mm-hmm. And so it also allows me to build other people's brands up brick by brick. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, and you may know, just owning your own firm, they don't look at, like, institutions don't look at us like we can do what they do. They feel like we have to come to them in some sort of way. And so that's the uniqueness about the I Am Freshy brand. Because we've had the hustle, we don't mind helping our clients hustle to get to the top.
That's right. Let's start, before we get into the I Am Freshy brand, let's go all the way back. Okay. Humble beginnings and so forth. Who is Freshy, right? First of all, is Freshy your government name?
Freshy is not my government name.
Okay.
My government name is actually Darian Perry. And then I also went by Darian Singletary because that was my dad's last name. And so... I am from Houston, Texas, born and raised. Mm-hmm. I come from a broken family, experienced a foster home, didn't really have a lot of resources as far as entertainment growing up. I just knew that my dad worked for Rap-A-Lot at one point in time, and my aunts were models, and we have a lot of NFL players in our family. And so I've always kind of seen like a hustle, per se, and... grew up, my mom ended up going to prison, my dad ended up going to prison. I went to foster home, my grandmother found me, she adopted me.
Okay, you going fast. Let's slow down. How old were you when your parents went away to prison?
I think I was like, I want to say, it was off and on from the age of seven. Mm-hmm. Off and on from the age of, I want to say, seven to about 12.
Seven to 12. So you, and they consistently were being arrested.
It was like a consistent, it was one of them situations where they was consistently being arrested. And prior to me realizing any of that was going on, I was still one of those kids that was like, I want my mom, I want my dad. So it didn't take me, I didn't figure out that my life was untraditional right off bat. I was like, still like, okay, taking care of my younger brothers and sisters that was at home. What, my
how many
two older
have?
Sisters. So I have, there's James and Jamie's here. They're younger than me. Mm-hmm. Trevante and Leroy, they're younger than me. And then I had two older sisters, Tanisha and Taquisha. The three of us that were closest, me, James, and Jamecia, because we all had the same dad.
Okay.
She was always very keen. If my father had to go to jail or my mom had to go to jail, she would take us to court. So we would really sit in the court. And that was a point of time.
You would hear it.
And we would hear it. And that was a point of time where we had to testify. That was a point of time where we had to testify. And then that was leading all the way up until the whole custody battle. We've had to testify in court. And so I think, although I was very familiar, I didn't really see my parents as being criminals, more so of wanting to take care of their family.
So what did they go to jail for? What were their charges?
So the crazy thing about it, my mom actually was, she actually worked for the police department. And so she was helping bust my dad, or she was helping do a drug bust. And so he went for guns and drugs. And then she started using drugs. Okay. And so it kind of became one of those type of things where she became addicted. And once she was addicted, she just ended up being in that lifestyle.
Okay. So you said at one point you went into foster care.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what happened? How did you find out about that, and what happened, and how did you process being away from your family?
So James and Jamie Seale were named after my dad.
Mm-hmm.
His name was James Singletary. And then, like, I just was the only one that had my own kind of name, and I had my mom's last name on my birth certificate. And so it was one of them situations where then the family was like, well, that's not really his son. And so it was like a huge mix up for that, a huge mix up. I was with my mom at the time she went to jail. And so when CPS came and got us, my brother and my sister went together with CPS. I went to my own place. Well, I kind of got lost in the system. And so the family that I went to, because at first, before I went to foster home, I was, still never forget this, they admitted me to a mental health hospital.
Now, why?
Because it was just like, this kid is not normal. Like, at this point, I've started to realize what was going on. I didn't want to be touched. I didn't want to be talked to. I was lashing out. I was just trying to, I was never like a mean kid, but I was always like, I knew if I was being touched inappropriately, I knew if something wasn't right, I knew if you genuinely loved me, because no matter what my mom and my dad had done, I could tell that the love that was genuine for them. And so going into a foster home, you can tell if you went somewhere and someone was getting the, like, I was always smart enough to know that there was money behind, there was a process behind this, or I was a child that people felt like they could take advantage of, and I was always stronger than what people assumed. Same. I was. And so
let me ask you this. Were you touched as a child in foster care?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Multiple times.
And is that when you started lashing out, or the lashing out happened before you went into foster care?
It was around that time I started, lashing out.
Okay. And did you ever say, somebody did something to me?
I never spoke, like, and to this day, I've never spoke on that. I never spoke on being touched. I was even touched by one of my older cousins. I've just never spoke on it because in that time, my family was already broken. I've seen, and I've seen other people in my family come out and say they was touched or something happened to them. And I've seen how...
The response.
I've seen the response and how it divided the family even more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of always kept those things to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I've always felt like you are what you respond to. You become what you respond to. And you're only victim if you allow yourself to fall.
To fall for that.
Fall for that. And mm-hmm. so because I've always felt as a child, I was a lot stronger than my circumstances. And like I said, I've always kind of went into a creative space in the back of my hand. So I've always felt like nothing happens to me, but things happen for me.
Mm-hmm. So at that time, at about that age, how old were you, freshie?
About that around that time, I was probably like 8 or 9.
8 or 9.
Eight or
so
nine.
I'm assuming that was your introduction to sex. You probably mm-hmm. did not know what that was at that time.
I didn't know what that was.
And so was it multiple people at the different homes that were taking advantage of you?
It was two people particular at one of the homes. And then, like, I found a really good foster family, and that's when I end up getting that's when I end up getting admitted into a home, and then from there my grandmother found out where I was, and then she came back and adopted me. So then I was put back with my dad's side of the family.
So for a while no one knew where you were.
Yeah, no one knew
where I was. So that was traumatic for them. So let me ask you this, do you think that most children that go through the foster system go through sexual abuse?
I honestly think a lot of children do grow through it. And I think a lot of them feel like it's normal, because you have to think when you are being displaced from what's supposed to be your real family, the people that protect you, you almost feel like you owe yourself to the people who said, yeah, I'll take you in. And so you don't see it as harm. And then I don't want to say something as little as being touched, but that feels so much better than not having a roof over your head or not feeling loved in a place where you're seen, that you're supposed to be loved. So I think it's almost by accident that you just don't see anything wrong with it.
The child feels like, I'm finally safe.
Safe.
Yeah. So at that point, Freshie, were you aware of your sexuality at that point? Or do you think that had something to do with the development of your sexuality?
Oh, no. I think I was aware of my sexuality too.
So the touching had nothing to do with. Okay.
And I also think a lot of times, and this may be extremely controversial, I think a lot of times that's why people don't come forward, because I was already aware. And so you really just don't think anything is wrong with it. And yeah, I'm a child, and yeah, so on and so forth. I honestly feel like it would have been a lot more traumatic for me if a woman touched me than guys touching me. And so I think it just has a lot to do with, like, growing up you're told that being gay is wrong and so on and so forth, and then you go through all these traumatic experiences. I was placed in a foster home. I don't really know any better, but I feel safe now. I feel like I found a family. And so if this one thing, I didn't really feel like what they were doing bad at the time. Of course, you grow up, you learn, you're older, you find out what real love is, and I go back and look, but at that time I didn't really see.
You didn't really.
It wasn't very traumatic for me.
Yeah, because at some point it may have felt good to you, and you were too young to understand that it was not good for you. Right. So grandma comes and gets you. You're with your grandmother at that point. Is that stability for you, or is that still kind of up and down?
It becomes stability.
Okay.
So it definitely becomes stability. And to this day, people hear me say this all the time, I'm so grateful for my grandmother and my grandfather, because I wouldn't be the person who I was today had they not found me, had they not moved out of there. At that point, they should have been retired. They've already raised all of their kids. Mm-hmm. All their kids had already had all of us. And so this was supposed to be their freedom years, and to be have to take on three additional children and move out of a condo, go get a house built, move further north so that we can get a good education. I feel like they had to redo life all over again.
The sacrifices of love. That's the sacrifice. So did you graduate from high school? Okay. And then did you go off to college?
I went off to college. The ironic thing is, like, when I graduated high school, I didn't want to go to college. I actually only went to college by accident. Like, I knew I wanted to go to college, but I had, by the age of 17, I had moved out of my grandparents' house and moved with one of my aunts, because I wanted more freedom, because my grandparents' house became so strict. I wanted more freedom. I started working already. I had started building up a sense of popularity about myself in school. I've always been, like, popular and stuff. And so I was like, okay, I moved. And then I end up graduating. I end up calling myself, I had just during high school, during my final years in high school, I ended up meeting some of my family in Dallas.
Okay.
And hadn't seen them, but I felt like they were more like me than my family that I grew up with. And so I called myself moving to Dallas. And the reason why, this is so funny when I tell this story, the reason I ended up moving back to Houston and end up going to school was because I won a meet and greet to a Beyonce concert. And so I got on a Greyhound.
Okay.
And I went back to, I got on a Greyhound. I end up one of my aunts picked me up. I had met her later on in life too. Mm-hmm. I end up getting to the concert, finding out that I want a meet and greet, but I had to have tickets. I didn't have tickets. I tried to get my meet and greet passes to my pastor because I had ended up running into him. Mm-hmm. He was like, no, something's great is going to happen for you. And so then I end up getting some random person just gave me tickets. I end up going into the meet and greet and like all of the kind of stuff. And so that was like one of my first situations of seeing manifestation happen like in real life on time, not really understanding it. And from there, I end up just moving back to Houston. I never mm-hmm. went back to Dallas after that. And so a week later, mm-hmm. I went to visit one of my aunts at Texas Southern University. And I end up enrolling in school. never went back home.
Now, how long did you stay
in college? I stayed in college. I stayed at Texas Southern for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Houston Community College. And then I finally went back to Texas Southern to graduate.
Okay. So you did, even though it was like you fell into college, you kind of still understood
that I understood what I wanted to do.
No, it was a point where you were a stylist, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I think I remember, like I always vaguely remember meeting you in Houston one time. I was representing Tawanda Braxton.
Yes.
And I remember we were in Houston for something.
It was the Musician Wives. I think it
was something like that. And I remember someone saying, I have a stylist here for her. His name is Freshie. Mm-hmm. And I meet so many people all the time, but your name stood out to me. Freshie, mm-hmm. You know, you don't meet that many Freshies. And I remember that. And remember you styled her. She loved it. And then several years later, I remember hearing that Freshie was now a publicist, mm-hmm. right? So how did you maneuver from being a celebrity stylist to becoming a publicist?
Okay, so even how I got into the entertainment industry was so crazy. So I made six figures like right out of college or during college.
Okay.
I went into real estate and property management. So I was driving a Mercedes, living in a high rise like early on because wow. I've always had a hustle by myself and I've always just wanted to do things. And so mm-hmm. I remember wanting to move off of campus from TSU mm-hmm. and wanting to move into a high rise. Mm-hmm. I went and looked at this high rise. As I was looking at it, I still remember the assistant manager was like, I was asking so many questions and like I was trying to figure out like why was the rent this much and it's just on this side of the bridge and my college is on the other side of the bridge. Mm-hmm. This is considered third ward. The prices shouldn't be like that. So on and so forth. And she's like, oh, you know what you're doing. Have you ever thought about getting into property management? I had never heard of property management before that time period or anything, but I was like, oh, let me try. I applied mm-hmm. and I ended up moving up in the company really, really fast. And so it went, it was so fast that Graystar paid for me to become a property manager. So they paid for me to go to school and everything.
Okay.
And so in that, it's not that I necessarily love property management. One thing I know about myself, you can always ask me for something. And I might not have the resources that you need, but I can pinpoint you and I can get you into the place that you need to be mm-hmm. just with a little time and research. And mm-hmm. I'm all for research. I'm all for time. This goes way back to high school, going to concerts for free because I was calling the radio station and figuring out how to hustle the radio station. Mm-hmm. So I've always been able to mm-hmm. get things done. Mm-hmm. And so there was a point of time where I was suffering from exhaustion. I ended up getting checked into the hospital. Mm-hmm. I remember my boss from the property I was last working at, she called and she was like, if you don't come to work today, you no longer have a job. I checked myself out of the hospital, IV in my arm and everything, and I went and returned the keys. A week prior to that, I had just prayed to God because at this point, I'm popular. I have a bunch of friends. I'm finally leaning into my sexuality. I'm meeting people. I'm now off of antidepressants. Like I'm a full fledged adult, the adult that no one said that I would be. I'm learning things. Mm-hmm. I turned in those keys, and I'm just like, look, this is not for me anymore. Because if it's that easy for you to get rid of me, I don't want to spend X amount of more time here only for you to get rid of me. Mm-hmm. And so I had already knew Courtney Richards. Courtney Richards, shout out to her. She was I ran her fan club. She was a radio DJ in Houston at 97.9, and I ran her fan club. And so we became really close. She started working for BET. She started working on Being Mary Jane. I worked at Nordstrom during the summertime and during the holiday time to get the discount for the semi-annual sale.
I know that's right.
So I would always go work at Nordstrom. And so during that time, I met a lot of people, and people assumed I was a stylist because I've always dressed nice. And so Courtney got a job as a writer on Being Mary Jane. They came to Houston to do a special. They needed a stylist. At the time I lost my job, at the time I quit my job, I got a call. I missed the call. I ended up calling the number back. It was a 212 number, and it was the BET headquarters. I was like, well, who called me from BET? And I listened to the voicemail, and it was this guy named by the name of O'Neill. Shout out to O'Neill. We're still friends to this day. He was just like, hey, I'm working on this project. You were referred to us by Courtney. We wanted to know if you're still styling. We have a project for you. I'm like, okay, I ain't never styled before for real, but
you ain't telling them that, right?
Mm-hmm. I was contemplating, like, do I call them and I tell them back, or do I just go with it? So I'm like, okay, how hard could this be? Call back. They're like, okay, well, we have $1,200 for you to style five women.
$1,200 for five women? Where were you pulling them from? The $7 store? What?
Nordstrom.
So then that kicked off my styling.
That kicked off my styling thing. And then LaToria Lemon of Lemon Limelight Media. We went to high school together. We went to middle school together. She had her right when all this was happening. I was huge at giving back. I've always, no matter what I've been through, believed in bringing other people up. And I've always been into philanthropy. And so she was doing this toy drive. I donated at her toy drive. We ended up reconnecting after all these years. She had moved back to Houston from Atlanta. And so she was working with the Musician Wives, who was working with the Braxtons, or bringing them out there for an event.
And then that's how we met.
That's how we met.
Yep.
So LaToria would start hiring me to style clients and stuff that she had. She started hiring me to style clients and stuff that she had. And that's kind of how I started looking to see what PR was. And it's not that I wanted to do PR, because even then I still did not necessarily want to do PR. I didn't necessarily enjoy styling either, but I loved connecting the dots for people. That's always been my niche. Like
the
relationships and building relationships and cultivating relationships. And I get so much fulfillment out of people having an idea, and I can be a part of the process of helping you execute that.
I noticed, I love that. I love that too. And so then you became enamored with publicity in some form or fashion. And then you jump in. See, it seems like every time you jump into it, you just don't put your toe in. You go all the way in, because then you started working with Offset and Cardi and Saucy and so forth. And Offset and Cardi are some of the top names in hip hop, right? So I think Cardi was signed with another young lady.
Patience,
right? Were you working with her at one point? Is that how the relationship came about?
That's how the relationship came with Cardi. So go back to, I was still living in Houston. I had not started the Iron Freshie brand at this point. I was still figuring everything out. This is still like the styling days. I don't even know how I came across Patience. I don't know how I came across Patience's profile, honestly. But I was obsessed with Patience, like just to see who she was. And then on the back end, I was also a huge Cardi fan. And this is like 2016, 2017, before Cardi just really blew. And so Patience would always do these motivational lives. And it felt so relatable, because everything I had seen that was entertainment and publicity, or even stylists, or anything that we've seen up until this point, has been very glamorous. It's been very by the book. It's been publicists wear black. They don't talk. They don't know how to do multiple things. And at this point, Patience was still doing Cardi's hair. She was her stylist. This is before the team was built. And so I was like, well, if you ever need help with Cardi, just let me know. I know how to do these type of things. And so we started a relationship on Instagram, and we slowly built. And so I actually met Cardi before I met Patience, because Patience couldn't come to Houston one time. So she trusted me to handle Cardi in Houston because I was from Houston. Mm-hmm. And then I end up, Diddy at this point. So there's this girl named Jay Malone from Houston. Mm-hmm. Jay Malone was someone who said, you're not going to be a stylist, because I was trying to style her. She was building her modeling company in Houston. She's like, you're not going to be a stylist, my stylist. You're going to be my publicist. And I was like, girl, I don't even know what. I was like, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I did it. And so she was best friends with Justin Combs. They would allow me to help out with Justin and Christian's PR. Mm-hmm. And then that was Jillianis. I would start helping with her. And so it had allowed me to build a relationship with Diddy. And then like Megan James, mm-hmm. From Bad Girls Club, she mm-hmm. had just moved to LA. She was also one of my friends from Houston. She allowed me to go to LA every now and then and sleep on her couch so that I could get experience. So it was so many different people that were feeding into me to mm-hmm. help me build this thing. And so when I was ready to build with Patience, I knew, and I had resources, and she had Cardi, and so it was a lot of things that she wanted resources and stuff to do. And like, I remember Diddy getting online one day. I was like, I want to meet Cardi. And so it was BT Awards weekend, and I end up bringing, I was like, keep the house open. I'm going to bring Cardi to the house. And I end up bringing, and that's when we all physically met in person.
Okay. So that's the connector, mm-hmm. right? Being resourceful and paying very close attention. That's what most people got to realize. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not about, you know, it's being resourceful,
right?
Adding value. Okay, so then you began working in the realms of Patience and mm-hmm. Cardi and so forth. And then you even worked with one of the greats, Karen Civil,
mm-hmm.
right? So you worked with her for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Were you with Karen when the big scandal came about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm sure there's audio of me defending her on Clubhouse. Like, mm-hmm. I was with her. And I'm so thankful for Karen, because in that time, like, I had already established who I was as a person. But in that time, I wanted to, so for me, PR has never been about the client. Like, I don't care how big you are. Mm-hmm. Do you really have a story to tell? Mm-hmm. Can you also offer me some sort of benefit?
That's right.
And so Karen offered me benefits in a way of structuring my business, automating my business. And she was very 100% real with me as it pertains to the industry. Not everybody is your friend. People are going to use you. Mm-hmm. People are going to, you'll be up one day and you'll be down tomorrow. And again, she just reconfirmed my whole notion of nothing happens to you. Things happen for you. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
I mean, that was a very public situation,
That was
right?
a very public situation.
Right. And because Karen was the epitome mm-hmm. of what we saw in the space of brand management mm-hmm. and things of that nature. And to see the fall of that.
Mm-hmm.
And to witness it, and then to witness so many people bringing so much excitement on seeing someone fall.
Right.
That was disheartening for me.
Right. And it was disheartening for me too, but I also think me knowing her, I don't think she really fell. I feel like it knocked her into a place where she was supposed to be at anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Because now she's a VP at Young Money.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that was her just due that should have been owed to her. She doesn't have to work as hard or be as public. She doesn't have to be as front facing mm-hmm. because we've all seen it where we have to be as front facing, and that's a job in its own for people to respect us and what we really do.
Mm-hmm.
So although I think it was definitely like a pivotal moment in her career, and from the outside looking in and from a social media standpoint, it tainted her brand. I definitely just feel like it put her where she was supposed to be this whole time.
It pivoted her.
She didn't have to work. She no longer has to work harder than most men that were in her position. And let's be honest, like, I'm dealing with that right now. As a publicist, as someone who offers services as a black business, when a person don't get what they want, we're labeled as scammers, or we're labeled as just these horrible people.
And let's talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that, because I think that is very important to mm-hmm. to see. Because one of the things I think that caught my attention about you, and I said, definitely want to bring Freshie in, is because you're mostly the most transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Many times, especially publicists, as mm-hmm. you said, everything had to be all black or very strict and staunch and perfect. No one ever really expresses their down times, mm-hmm. when they're in pain, frustration, disappointment when clients, you know, play both ends of the stick. Because I always tell people, don't always listen to what a client says when they come to you and talk about their last publicist, okay? Because you don't know both sides of the story. It could be either end, right? Sometimes people are saying, this person didn't give me that, they didn't do anything, but did you provide them what they needed for you to be successful? I can't make, if you're selling dirt on the ground, I can't make you the cover of Vogue next week. You got to give me something, right? So you have been very, very, very public mm-hmm. on social media. And sometimes I'm like, is everything okay, mm-hmm. right? You will share the moments where you feel depressed. Mm-hmm. You will share your diagnosis. Mm-hmm. You'll talk about some of the challenges you had with your childhood. You've even shared some of the challenges that you had in the past with abuse, mm-hmm. substance abuse. Mm-hmm. Even frustration with clients at times. I remember one time you said, I'm done with PR. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here, right? So let's talk about that a little bit. Do you feel that social media is your outlet? Like, why do you feel that you've become so transparent?
Not necessarily that social media is my outlet, but I feel like when I get into those moods and those moments, I feel like me saying that it's helping someone else, whether they like to say it's helping them or not. We are going through stuff that nobody knows that we're going through.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We are all going to eventually be okay. Some things could be so minuscule, but because there's not people really sharing what's really going on, you have people jumping off bridges or committing suicide because they don't feel like they can relate or they can't get past this particular point. And so a lot of times, me being vocal and me being transparent, it's not going to erase anything that I've done before. It's not going to erase anything that I'm going to do in the future, because what's for me is going to always be for me. Mm-hmm. But what it will do is remind people that I am human. Mm-hmm. I will make mistakes.
We all do, right?
I'm going to make mistakes. Every day is not a good day. Mm-hmm. Today I love my job. Tomorrow I might hate my job. But those are common feelings that we all have, no matter what profession we're in, no matter where we're at in life. It's real.
It is. It's real. But how do you keep your high-profile clients when you're saying, I hate my clients today, right? Like, how do you keep them still engaged and still wanting to come back?
Because I don't think it's ever been a point where I just said I've hated my clients. Mm-hmm. I think I'm very vocal of, you need to learn how to treat me so I can treat you better.
That's right.
And I feel like that's okay. I feel like that's okay. I feel like if I lose a client by me being vocal about how I feel of how they treated me, then I shouldn't have that client anyways.
Have you ever lost someone because of that?
I feel like I lose clients all the time. And it's just one of them type of things where I feel like I can honestly say any client that I have mm-hmm. that I wanted mm-hmm. and that I feel is most like me, I have not lost any of those.
Mm-hmm. I think the challenge we have in this industry is that most people sign with a particular publicist because they'll see what they've done with someone else, right? Mm-hmm. And they immediately want you to do that for them. So people will see you maybe with, you know, getting Offset at the Met Gala or at Fashion Week in Paris. And they think that if they sign up tomorrow, you're going to do the same thing for them. And that is what I always say. You have to be realistic with people up front. Mm-hmm. That's Offset. That's Cardi. That's mm-hmm. Saucy, right? Not saying you can't get there, but there's a process
to that. There's a process.
And do you feel that people... do you feel like you see a lot of that? People come to you because they see mm-hmm. that and they think overnight I'm going to be able to get there.
Yeah, and I think and that's another reason why I'm always so vocal. Mm-hmm. If you're a cake baker, it's going to take me 4 and 5 years to get used to a Roc Nation brunch, even if that's a if that's even still a thing then.
Uh-huh.
And one thing I'm learning is I'm not gonna always have all of the answers.
Mm-mm.
I'm not gonna always have all of the answers. And no matter how many times I beat expectations of people, people have their own expectations. And that's then one of the things I've had to learn to do is stop offering refunds in my contracts.
Refunds.
And the reason, and
why do you have refunds in contracts?
And I was doing it because I'm just that comes from the humble version of myself,
okay,
and me not really having like a standard of how to build this. So like everything I've done has kind of been by trial and error.
That's right. Okay.
And so because I've only had success stories up until that point, I started offering refunds. But see, now I started getting the wrong type of clients. Who, no matter how much work I was doing for them, they just were never really satisfied anyways. Or I can make a PR plan for you. You don't ever want to provide me what I need for the PR plan, but you're expecting the results that was set forth for that plan.
One of the things you said, though, Freshie, is we attract things, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that you put out that attracted these particular types of clients?
Because I work with so many different types of clients across the board. Mm-hmm. So again, whereas in that's why over the last year or so I've stopped beating myself up, because I would beat myself up because the client was like, well, you're horrible, I want a refund and blase blase. Mm-hmm. But I have to look at it. You're complaining, I signed someone after you and their results mm-hmm. are plummeting through the mm-hmm. roof. So I had to just really really put my grown up. I'm not going to be able to impress everybody. I'm not going to be able to have the same results.
Everybody's not your client.
Everybody is not my client. Everybody mm-hmm. is not for me. And again, sometimes some people, no matter how many times you tell them what it's going to take, they still have it in their mind because of social media, because things look so easy. They have in their mind, like, pay me today, tomorrow they're going to be everywhere mm-hmm. and then some more things.
Mm-hmm. All money's not good money.
That's what I'm starting to learn. All money is not mm-hmm. good money.
Let's talk a little bit, Freshie, about your substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How old were you when you began using?
It was definitely after the age of 21, because I still remember I didn't even smoke for the first time until after I was 21. I definitely was a good child. My grandma said, don't do drugs, don't. I was definitely that. And I think my substance abuse came in when I finally got off of antidepressants. And I no longer, I knew, you feel sad, take this pill, blah, 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 or go to counseling and so on and so forth.
You had to deal with reality.
When I had to deal with reality, like mm-hmm. when I jumped out, I moved to Atlanta. My substance abuse definitely started when I felt like that was the only place that I had mm-hmm. to go. And I didn't realize it. And then it was like one of those type of things. It started social. So it didn't even really just start. It started as something that was social. I would go out because I was upset or work had became too stressful. And then it started with one drink. And then I started to realize, oh, well, I'm at work and I'm drinking like this. And then it went from, okay, well, I don't want to drink like this. So let me start using drugs. And then now I'm using drugs. I'm like, okay, it feels good right then and there, but that come down and that jumping back into a regular mm-hmm. Routine is becoming harder. And then it wasn't until this was last year, even up until last year, I realized I had an alcohol problem. I was on the press run in New York, and I'm one, I can take so much, and I tend to be a bigger person, but I lashed out at one of my clients after a successful press run.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, that was good that this happened in January. I need to get it together because now my clients are starting to
notice it. They're starting to see it.
Now it's starting to affect my business.
So your drug of choice was alcohol, or mm-hmm. was it something else?
It was alcohol.
Okay. And did you admit yourself for help, or did you do a cold turkey?
I just did a cold turkey. Like, it losing one of your biggest clients, is definitely gonna do the trick. And it was a client that, this was the first time I had lost a client that meant a lot to me. Like, it was like, definitely, if you saw this client, you saw me, you saw the work that we was able to do. And so it was like one of those situations.
Do you still talk to that client today?
I feel like there's no harm. We definitely have talked, but it hasn't been that conversation hadn't happened. Like, we had a conversation, but it hasn't been one of those conversations where we was like, we should really just sit down and talk. But it's definitely been the situation. If they ever needed me, they can come to me at any point in time. And I was always still sending them opportunities and stuff like that, because I've been the only publicist that people known them to have.
Have you ever thought about reaching out and saying, hey, I'm sorry?
Well, I apologize. I want to say the night after, very next day.
Okay.
And so, again, we have the same circle and stuff. So it's been times where we've exchanged information, and I've still helped in certain spaces. But I feel like that in-person conversation, we literally haven't seen this person in person in a year or so. But definitely, I feel like that time is going to come.
So that was the moment when you said, wait a minute, I need to get myself together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the other thing about this industry is, there's a lot of alcohol, there's a lot of drugs, there's a lot of sex, there's a lot of everything in the industry. And you have to determine if you're going to indulge. Or you're going to just witness it, right? But it happens. And so that is a very difficult part of the relationship or what we do. And I think especially for you, because if you're battling with mental health and you are just off of your meds, you're looking for something to supplement. And so I am very grateful today that people are more open about Black men and mental health.
That's one of my favorite. It's just one of my favorite subjects, because I think is in not even medicine, because, like, I'm gonna tell you, I'm antidepressant. Like, I'm anti taking depressants, taking medicines, taking any of those type of things, because I feel like those things crutch us and they put us in such a limbo for so long that we feel like we need them to learn how to act. I feel like one of the easiest cures to mental health is to actually talk to people and figure out and really care to see what they really have going on. It's so taboo for Black men and Black women, and I just think race in general, to be vulnerable.
Especially in the position that you're in, because everybody's looking at you to have all the answers.
Right.
And for you to say, wait a minute, I don't have all the answers. I need help. People don't take the time out to say, Freshie needs help.
Right.
Right? So, now, what about, I think I saw online, you're in love now. Okay. Engaged to get married, or?
Hopefully that part is coming. I'm just in love right now.
And so how much has, the substance abuse and so forth played in finding love, like letting that go? And how has all that played out for you?
I honestly don't think it was a direct connection. I think last year was like the year I just said, I'm going to grow.
Manifested the love.
Yeah. And I've already knew this person, and we were friends. And it just felt right. Like, it just came at a time where I felt like I was getting myself together. They were getting themselves together. And it was
this time. Let me ask you this, though. One of the things I talk a lot to people about is it's different when you meet someone when you have nothing, before you get to where you are. It's very difficult to meet people at your pinnacle. How were you able to open up and trust that this person really was into Freshie or Darian and not into Freshie? You know, it's two different components. How did you know that he didn't want to be at Offset's birthday party, but he really wanted to be with you for dinner? How do you know that?
Because having all that access has never been a time where that was asked for. And I have friends who I've had forever, mm-hmm. and I don't hear from them unless it's something work-related or they need tickets somewhere or they want to go to the Beyonce concert or mm-hmm. So on and so forth. So because even when those things are offered, he's one of them type of people, well, I've already made plans with my friends, so I can't go,
okay.
or vice versa. If we have plans, he can turn his plans down. And then he has his own job and mm-hmm. has his own life going on and he has his set of friends. And he's not into the whole glitz and glamour of everything. Although if I invite him somewhere, he'll step up to the occasion. Mm-hmm. That's not
forefront for him.
That's not forefront okay. from him. And okay. it's never, he don't look at me as Freshie the publicist. It's kind of mm-hmm. like, that's my man.
That's your man. See, that's I think that's perfect because a lot of times when you're dating someone in the same industry, you never really know.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. All right, so Freshie, let's talk a little bit about some of your most challenging moments as a publicist, mm-hmm. especially dealing with you know, the different celebrities and some of the things. What is some of the advice that you would give to some of these new publicists? Because I noticed that we're in the same PR groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen where individuals may say, hey, I have access to so-and-so, I'm doing so-and-so, and then you may come back and say, wait a minute, who are you? I'm the publicist for this. I think most recently it was something like Offset's birthday party or mm-hmm. something, and I know you probably get that quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that? Other publicists or other people misrepresenting their relationship with your clients, and then you having to kind of...
I think just being direct, and that's what I'm learning. You just have to be direct, and you have to put people in their place. And like where I'm having difficulty with these new publicists, a lot of them are going to school for PR. A lot of them had great leadership or could have great leadership.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want to do the work.
Mm-mm.
A lot of right. them should be working for PR firms.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily trying to start a PR firm on their own. A lot of them, it goes to, I always say this thing, people ask me all the time, why don't I teach a PR class?
Mm-hmm.
Because I am still learning PR.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not an expert by any means.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I still collaborate. That's why I'm still in PR groups. And especially where we are today, the landscape is changing. But what I've realized is these new and emerging publicists, and it's a big thing in Atlanta, they don't want to do the work. It's so much easier for them to say, hey, who has the contacts for such and such?
Yes.
That's like at base level as right. a publicist. That's like, that's base level work. Mm-hmm. And so.
Or they'll say, I have a client that's in basketball. Anybody looking to cover a story on basketball. That's not how you pitch your client.
Yeah. And this is supposed to be a publicist support group.
Yes.
So we're not the ones for that anyways. Write a pitch.
Right. And get it out.
And get
but
it out
the moment that you say that, though, inside these groups, then the younger publicists will come back and say, oh, you guys are being mean and you guys aren't being helpful and la, 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 la. And so then sometimes, I just get mute. I just won't say anything
at
because
all.
I don't want it to be misread. But the same token, in order to really get to a certain level in this business, you got to put the work in.
You have
in.
To put the work in. And I don't care about anybody thinking I'm mean because everybody who's known me and who's ever had an encounter with me know that they can get anything out of me.
Mm-hmm.
All I want to do is see you put in the effort because if you know what I've been through to get to where I'm at,
mm-hmm.
I'm not giving anybody anything for
Thank
free.
You. Thank you. Listen, because it may have taken you 7-8 years to finally get this contact at this place. And what they don't realize too is just because you have the email and the phone number doesn't mean that person's going to respond to you. They open up emails or return calls from names and numbers that they know.
That they're familiar with, that they built over a sense of time.
Yes.
A lot of my contacts come from me physically jumping on the plane, going to LA, going to New York, going to the office, sending gifts, going to events, networking. I didn't get it from sitting in the group saying, hey, do you have this contact?
That's right.
And so it's not fair for me to get you there. And my thing is, if me just giving you that contact or me just giving you free game is doing a disservice for you, because you're going to think that's how this industry works, and it's not how this industry works.
Right.
And that's why we have so many people thinking, as a publicist, all we do is put people on red carpets or send them to events. No, that's at very base level.
And now I hear some clients that do complain about that. They're like, my last publicist I had, all they want to do is send me to red carpets, and that's not what I want. And that's what people need to hear. That's not the basis of publicity.
That's not,
It's not. But now, Freshie, what would one need to do to get your attention? So let's say you are producing a big celebrity birthday party, and you got all these, I'm sure you get all of these PR people that submitting their clients. What makes you say, one, I'm going to open your email up. Two, I'm going to consider your client, especially if it's a client that may not have a quote unquote name. What is it that makes you say yes or no to submissions to events for you?
Well, first and foremost, it's always going to start with the subject line of the email. You can't send me an email with no subject.
Right. Like, what do you...
What is this?
What do you want? Right.
Then, if we're going into the base of the... we're going into the body of the email, let's say you did send me, it says RSVP. I would prefer to say RSVP, the name of the event, and who the client is in the subject, so it makes it easier for me to want to read it. But let's just say you just say RSVP. And I'm going to need something more than a name. With all these people in the world, I don't know who John Doe is.
And you can't just say, like, John Doe, the real estate agent.
Plus three.
Why would I care about that?
I don't care about that. Can I get a decent photo? We're in the age of social media, so can I get an Instagram handle? Let me know why you're RSVPing John for this event. The more information you give me to compel, if you do better sending me a bio, a photo, and the Instagram link, and I'm gonna see that it's more effort than you just sending me your name.
That's right. I think that's the other thing. People have to realize that you have to present yourself a certain way, and even study the platform or the outlet and so forth. Because I get people who pitch all the time for Coinology, and they may pitch to me something, and I'm like, okay, you haven't watched the episodes. Because if you watch the episodes, you'll know that the cake maker, Carrie, probably wouldn't be having the conversation that we're having right now, right? So those things are important, and then you have more of a chance. And so that's the other thing people have to realize, is not always a snub. Sometimes it's just...
it's not a good fit.
That's it, right?
It's not a good fit. And I tell people this all the time, because I get a lot of people that come to me, especially events. Hey, I have such, such, and such who wants to do events. My client wants to do events. This, what you call it, you seem to have a good rapport with the BET Awards, such and such and such. Okay, so what does it want? Do they want tickets? Oh, well, they want to walk the red carpet to be at all the things. No, they don't want to walk the red carpet, because no one's going to know who they are. And I'm also not going to risk my relationship with BET to help you get Bobo and Fifi on the carpet.
Say that again. That's what people don't realize. It's our relationships that are at risk.
And then even if I was able to get Bobo and Fifi on the red carpet, Bobo and Fifi is going to turn around and be mad at you and me, because no one on that red carpet is going to stop to talk to them.
And nobody's going to snap a picture. I've been at places, fresh. It's so embarrassing. You put the person on the carpet and the camera guys put their camera down. And they stand there and they look to the side. And I'm like, oh my God.
And all you had to do was stay home. All you had to do was either stay home or attend the event and not thinking you belong on the red carpet.
That's right.
And so,
but Atlanta does that. For some reason, everybody thinks that they are supposed to be on the red carpet.
And one question I always pose to people when they ask me to go to a certain event: why should you be there?
Thank you.
What would you benefit off of that? And how would the event benefit from you being there?
Just by you saying, for people saying, I want to be a Roc Nation's brunch, right? Why should you be there? And better yet, what benefit will Jay and Diddy and the rest of those guys get off of you being there. So that's the part I always tell people. It's not always about what you can get. You have to position yourself to be able to show this is what you will gain by my presence being there.
And that's the only, that's what I want people to understand. It's like this relationship building is a two-way street. What can you offer? What can you offer? It has to be more than your presence. That's right. We have to get out of that whole wall. I have a mixtape coming out next week. Well, you don't have one out now.
Right now.
You don't have one out
and
now.
And then we don't know what it's going to sound like next week.
And we don't know what it's going to sound like next week.
We don't, right?
And could you potentially be a new signee that's going to make them tons of money? Or could you, do you have access to something that they would need access to? It's a two-way street. You're not just going to the Roc Nation brunch because... And I'm not willing to risk a relationship that I built over the last 7 years.
And the Roc Nation brunch is not going to allow any of everybody. That's the whole point, the exclusivity of it all, right?
Right.
Is this important? And that's the part, I think, Freshie, that people sometimes don't get in this game, is the fact that we have to be gatekeepers as well.
We do. And I get that all the time. I got kicked out of a PR group not so long ago because I posed a question. I've been in this group for 2 years. Outside of sending event invites that most of y'all are not qualified to have clients to go to, and either and some of y'all are not going to, what else is this group about?
That's it. But let me tell you this. Let me ask you this. With the PR groups, do you think that it's dangerous? Because some of these events end up making it into the PR group. Then you have all of these randoms that end up...
at the event.
And then they shut it down. Then all of a sudden... the list gets shut down and it just...
Or the event becomes watered down.
Right.
And I am so strict with RSVPs, and that's one of the things I'm never going to be lenient on, because again, why do you belong here? Someone is paying me a lot of money to produce this event. They want a particular crowd. I don't care that you're in the group and this event ended up. Guess what? I'm in that group and I didn't put the flyer in there. You're not coming. If it was open to all, I wouldn't have had an RSVP link.
That's right. That's right.
That wouldn't have been an invitation. And it's okay. It may not be for you. You may not be able to go to the Roc Nation brunch, but you could probably go to the Spotify music the music brunch. You could probably go to the Warner after party. There's other places where you could probably go that is going to be more lenient for you. And some of these same people at the Roc Nation brunch are going to be there. But guess what? They couldn't get in there. And so they're here too, which means y'all all belong in the same room.
And then you work and that's your okay. way.
And you work your way up
it's
too.
Levels. That's the thing I think too, Freshie. A lot of people don't want to go through the levels. It's like immediately... day one, I want to own my own agency and I want to be at the Roc Nation brunch.
You know how exciting it feels to work your way up? My first placement was Control Magazine.
Oh, you know, what happened to Control?
I don't know, but I was excited when I got Control. I was excited when I got Rolling Out. Good Sheen. And I'm still excited, but you have to start there. You can't put your clients right off bat in Forbes, because what do they have to work up to?
Work up to. Right. And let me ask you this before we close out. What are your thoughts on paid placements versus earned placements? Because, you know, there are some people out here who are really big on, I'll spend $10,000 to get in Forbes. And I have my own viewpoint on that. But what are your thoughts on that?
I'm going to be completely while we're being transparent, I've tried it. I've tried it for clients. It does not work, because what's going to happen when you Google that client name that paid for advertisement does not have any SEO. It's not search engine optimized. And so you just wasted $10,000, because if a person is really trying to figure out who you are and they run your name through Google, that article is nowhere attached to your name, which means it don't have the viewership. It's not going to have the reach, and it's not going to do you any benefits. You pay for a vanity post.
That's it. You basically could have went and made a Forbes flyer and posted on your social media. Because the reality of it is, I'm really big on earned media, because the whole purpose is for you to get an ROI. And if you're trying to sell something, whether it be yourself and or products, you don't come out day one on Forbes. You need to work your way. It's a purpose for going through the smaller outlets and building and building and building, because the consistency of seeing your name and your product and your name and your product, that is what's going to get you the ROI. And then when you get to Forbes, oh, well, people should have already known who the heck you were anyway.
Right.
Right? And so the point is, the fact that if you go to Forbes on day one and no one else has ever done an article on you, immediately you know that was not.
It wasn't genuinely built. You went and you paid $97 because you saw an advertisement on Instagram.
That's it.
You paid $97 and they sold you a $10,000 Forbes article after that.
And let me say this, people need to beware, because there's ways for people to create a link that looks like Forbes and that really isn't Forbes.
And I always tell people too, why are you in Forbes Arabia and you haven't done Forbes US?
Thank you. Or Forbes India Be careful
what you do. Be careful.
Very, very careful.
And mindful.
And don't despise humble beginnings. It's okay to start off on some of the smaller outlets and podcasts, and then work your way, because you have to build that footprint.
And that footprint is very important, because when you Google your name, you want page after page after page of proof that you're who you say you are. That's how your Google panel forms. That's how your Wikipedia page forms. It all starts there. It all starts at the basis. And so this year, that's my one word to advice. My one piece of advice for everyone: crawl before you walk. And it is okay for prerequisites. We did it in high school. You couldn't take 12th grade math without ninth grade math. And in college, you couldn't take AP calculus without taking basic college math. It is okay. Prerequisites are set in place for reasons, and gatekeeping is okay.
It's okay. And because once you listen, you're going to have to do it.
And once you get to that level, you're going to want people to gatekeep your community.
That's
anyways.
Right. You're going
to
want to have someone gatekeep for you. So as we come to a close, what's next for Freshie?
What's next for me? I have a really big announcement that I am getting ready to gear up to announce in the next coming weeks. I'm super excited about that. I'm finally going over to a label, but it's an executive position.
Okay, congratulations.
And I don't have to change anything about the structure of my business, so it's a really good deal. So I'm excited about that.
Okay, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited that. And then I'm going on tour in March.
Okay.
Offset's going on tour. So I'm super excited about that. This is my first tour that I am running, my first tour that I'm running publicity for. So I'm super excited about that, and just constantly putting forth the efforts. Again, Santana is now independent again.
I
so
love
I'm super
saucy.
Excited.
I love saucy, okay?
I'm super excited about that. We're going back to the ground and we're getting work. And then I really want to expand the I Am Freshie brand so I can step down from the constant hustle and bustle and happen to intake clients, do all the work and so on and so forth. So I want to expand it to a point where I can pass on blessings to other up and coming publicists. But that part, I tried that and it didn't do me right the first time. So I'm like, I need some really good people, but that's a goal this year.
So when you had, what happened?
It's just people want to start their own PR firms after that, or they're pitching my clients for things that don't align with my clients, or they particularly want to work with the higher end clients and let the lower end clients just
they want to ride off of the work that Freshie has put in.
Right. And then they just feel like everything's going to come. And so I just want someone that wants to come and work their way up. I would love to have assistance with Offset and Saucy and Chad and the K Michelle's. I would love to have assistance with them, but it's kind of hard to trust fans to do the work of a publicist.
You never can trust a fan. That's number one. Never hire a fan. Because you're going to have a disaster. You know that.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's huge, Freshie. And then I know you also did some production in the past. You produced Black China's show that was over on E! Network, right?
I produced Black China's show that was on Zeus. I just launched a game show last year with Bel Air. That did really good. So we may do season 2 of that. And so I definitely want to get back into TV, TV production. I realized that I like to produce, but I might do some TV myself. I'm still on the edge of that, but I keep on getting offers. So I'm like, okay, if it
looks, I can definitely see you on TV.
if it's good enough, I'll take it. If it doesn't hinder my career, I'll take it.
I can definitely see you on TV. You definitely have the flair and everything else. So you sound like you got a lot going on for 2024. So that's great news. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you, you so
have
much.
Love. You have the business. You have the success. You have the clients, and you've actually built the reputation. This was not, people can't say Freshie just woke up one day, right?
No.
You've been at this grind for a very long time.
A very long time. That's so funny that you brought up Tawanda Braxton.
Because I always remember, I was like, okay, I remember this name, Freshie. I said, that was where I met him in Houston at Tawanda's. But I remember you were humble then. You were a great personality then, because Tawanda absolutely loved you. And I remember you stayed in my mind. So I can see why you always elevate, because it was something about you that day that made me remember you, so that 5 years down the road, or however long it was down the road when you became a publicist, I remembered you. Because what I will tell you is, most people get on my case because I don't typically remember, just because I meet so many people. And it's no shade, I just don't remember. But you were memorable.
Thank you.
I will say, I want to say congratulations on all your success.
Thank you, I really appreciate it.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you continue to shine.
Thank you. Now, likewise, congratulations on all your success. We definitely know who you are and all that you do for our community and just do for pop culture. And so, yeah, I, without people like you, there's not a space for people like me.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you guys for tuning in to Coinology. We'll see you next time.
Get no money if you're constantly worried about what everybody else got to say. If you constantly got your eyes on what everybody else doing, you ain't getting no money. When it comes down to closing a deal, I get it done. Every single one.
Welcome to Coinology, the podcast.